From the Moan Broadcast Center at KPCC, this is The Frame. I'm John Horn. On today's show, from the Laurel Canyon music scene to black cowboys in Compton, the diversity of Los Angeles is on screen at this year's LA Film Festival. Then the new movie Monsters and Men is about a Brooklyn community grappling with a police shooting of an unarmed black man. For filmmaker Ronaldo Marcus Green, it's a personal story.
You know, I didn't set out to make a political movie. It just so happens to tackle issues that mean something to me and my community. When this is your environment and the world that you know, you're making a movie about your friends.
And we remember a dance legend who brought classical ballet to kids in Harlem. All that coming right up.
KPCC podcasts are supported by National Geographic's Science Fair. Called inspirational and invigorating by the LA Times, the documentary follows 9 high school students on their journey to change the world through science. ScienceFairFilm.com. Science Fair, in theaters starting September 21st.
The Los Angeles Film Festival kicks off tonight with a documentary called Echo in the Canyon. It's about the Laurel Canyon music scene, but it's not the only documentary playing during the 9-day festival that seeks to illuminate a part of the city. In fact, there are many films, narrative ones as well, that were shot in or highlight different parts of Los Angeles. Jennifer Coaches is the director of the LA Film Festival. When I Skyped with her this morning, she began with that opening night film.
Honestly, it's a love song to our city. It's looking at that geographical point specifically, Laurel Canyon, and the music that came out of there in the 1960s, and how those creators, the California sound, it was invented here, and it traveled around the world. And this movie pays lovely homage to the originators of the sound. And outside of Echo in the Canyon, you know, in the programming throughout the festival, we have Peter Bogdanovich's Great Buster, A Celebration, which is certainly sort of about Los Angeles as well. And we have a film in LA Muse about Montgomery Cliff. So there's sort of old Hollywood and Hollywood themes woven throughout the fabric of the festival.
Unlike almost every other festival, there are a lot of films in your festival that are set where the festival actually happens. It's not like the Cannes Film Festival has tons of movies set in the French Riviera. And when you think about the movies that you're showing, do you think there's some broader themes about the city that are reflected in this year's lineup?
Well, I would say that the section I think that you're talking about is LA Muse. And we have roughly 5 documentaries in there, and we have 5 narrative features in there. And I mean, it runs the gamut. It's as diverse as the city itself. So we've got, cowboys from Compton. We've got a film called El Chicano, which is a sort of superhero origin story. If you can think of, a neighborhood in Los Angeles, there's probably a movie being made in it while you and I are talking to each other. I think that's an advantage maybe that our city has over other places, in that people who love movies live here, and the craftspeople and storytellers live here and come here either to learn the craft at some point or certainly pass through our city in the hopes of maybe moving here later on down the road.
This year, the festival has a couple of featured podcasts. What do podcasts add to the picture of LA, and why are they an integral part of the festival?
Well, so I'm kind of looking at this whole thing as a big experiment, and I am not particularly wedded to, a podcast at a film festival. How bizarre. Like, I'm looking at where good storytelling is coming from, and a film festival, this film festival, but I think in general, all film festivals should be about celebrating the best in story. And so adding podcasts this year, we have, Justin Simeon, Don't At Me, as part of the program. He and Lena Waithe are recording a podcast. And we've got this other podcast, Welcome to the Clambake. And it's sort of just like feminism, intersectional feminism now. So it's just giving a different type of storytelling a platform, and as another form of listening to somebody spin a yarn.
It also seems that in terms of venues, the festival is all over the city. In Culver City, the John Anson Ford Theater, in Beverly Hills, in Hollywood, there's a VR installation in Playa Vista. What were you looking for in terms of where movies and events would unfold during the festival?
By having programming throughout different pockets of Los Angeles, it's being in service to our citizens. So if somebody happens to live out in the beach area, Jacqueline Lianga, the former director of AFI Fest, she's our guest director of VR and immersive storytelling. She curated a free program of some of the best VR that's been out in the world in the past year. And likewise, we have free programming, like you mentioned, at the Writers Guild Theater in Beverly Hills. And I think just sort of identifying from east to west, easy places for folks to go.
Jennifer Kochis is the director of the LA Film Festival. Jennifer, thanks so much for coming back on the show. Good luck with the fest.
Thank you for having me, John.
The LA Film Festival runs through September 28th. Go to LAist to find out more. Now we'd like to acknowledge the passing of a legendary figure in the arts. Arthur Mitchell was a pioneering ballet dancer and choreographer. He was also the founding artistic director of the Dance Theater of Harlem. In this 2010 interview with the National Visionary Leadership Project, Mitchell said that when he set out to create a classical ballet school for kids in Harlem in 1969, he was met by skepticism from all sides.
The rumors that went around, he's crazy, insane, nuts, black kids could not relate. And even the black community, they didn't know why I was coming up here to do ballet. And they said, oh, it's a real estate trick, and he's here as a spy, and all kinds of things. And I took $25,000, which was all the money I had, and I put in a dance floor in a bar. We had no mirrors. And it was so hot, it had a tin roof. It was so hot, we had to leave the sides open. And that's how I recruited kids, because I started with two dancers and 30 children. In 2 months, I had 400 kids in the school. In 4 months, I had 800 kids in the school, boys and girls.
Arthur Mitchell died yesterday at the age of 84. Coming up, Anthony Ramos, who was in the original cast of Hamilton, is in the upcoming movies Godzilla and A Star is Born, but the film that he's most passionate about is called Monsters and Men. He and the film's director join me next.
KPCC podcasts are supported by National Geographic's Science Fair, the number one audience award winner at Sundance and South by Southwest. Hailed by critics as inspirational and invigorating and supremely entertaining, the documentary follows nine high school students from around the globe as they navigate rivalries, setbacks, and hormones on their journey to change the world through science. Visit sciencefairfilm.com for more information. Science Fair, in theaters starting September 21st.
Welcome back to The Frame. I'm John Horn. The upcoming film Monsters and Men is set in a neighborhood of Brooklyn where a tight-knit community grapples with a police shooting of an unarmed black man. Anthony Ramos plays a young father, Manny, who happens to film the police shooting on his cell phone. John David Washington plays a black cop who sees racial injustice everywhere. In fact, he experiences it firsthand, but feels helpless to change it. In this scene, his character is discussing the shooting at a dinner party.
Is it unfortunate what happened to Lawson? Yes, it is.
Fortunate? Hey, what are we talking about?
Lawson was breaking the law.
Selling cigarettes. That's pretty much.
I think he's playing devil's advocate.
Well, this time Skylar went too far. All right? He went too far. But again, we weren't there. And if he wasn't resisting arrest, he'd still be here.
So if I resist arrest, you're going to shoot me?
Babe.
Written and directed by Ronaldo Marcus Green, the film received the Special Jury Award for Outstanding First Feature at the Sundance Film Festival earlier this year. Monsters and Men is an expansion of Green's 2015 short film Stop, which was about the NYPD's controversial practice of stop and frisk. When Ramos and Green, who both grew up in New York, joined me in the Frame Studios, Ramos started with the similarities between his own life and his character, Manny's.
You know, first of all, I read the script, and I remember telling my agent, whatever I have to, I will do anything to play this role. Out of everything you sent me all year long, this is the one script. If I don't do anything else this year, if this is the only movie I do this year, I won. And I related to this guy so much in so many ways, especially being a young Puerto Rican male growing up in the projects in Brooklyn and Bushwick, the neighborhood, one neighborhood over from Bed-Stuy, me being privy to this stuff, growing up in this environment, me seeing some of these things happen and the way people react to some of to this kid getting shot or this kid getting stabbed or something crazy. It was always something going on, and I was like, yo, this story is so real and so honest. And I thought, you know, I for sure was ready to audition. I was like, I'll do 36 auditions for this role. I don't even care. Like my but I felt like he gave me, we hung up and I felt like he gave me the part, and I had to call my agent just to make sure. I was like, yo, I think he offered me this role, but can we just like double check?
I didn't even ask the producers. I was like, by the way, you know, this is how it's going
down.
It
was wild. I had gotten another huge offer for another project, you know, and this was the most money I would ever make.
This would be Godzilla, right?
Yeah. I don't want to say it, but I was like, yo, if you say to me that we can't work the schedule out, then I'm going to respectfully give up that film so we can do this because I have to be a part of this, you know. And I'm so grateful that they both worked out. Godzilla was an incredible experience. I mean, an experience of a lifetime. So the fact I was traveling from Atlanta and doing this behemoth of a film and then coming to New York and we're shooting our small, scrappy, like, film in New York. It was so good, man. It was artistically, man. It couldn't be more of a dream.
It seems like so much of your own lives informed your understanding and approach to the issues in this film. But where did you figure out that you, as collaborators, were a good match? What were the conversations you had as filmmaker and actor about working together? And why did you think it was a good marriage?
Well, I had seen Anthony in a film called White Girl, and I was like, "Who's that?" he's quite a looker, so I was already, you know, I had my eyes on the guy for a while. I said, "Okay, this guy is definitely nice, able to carry a film," and I thought he was able to steal a scene. Fast forward, I went to NYU Tisch Graduate Film School, and Spike Lee was a teacher of mine, and he helped me cast my short film Stop. I went to him and I said, "Do you know any kids?" And he didn't say anything, just wrote a name on a piece of paper and handed it over. I was like, "Okay, I guess Spike gives you a number. You got to call it." So I called, and that's how I thought, okay, I'm making my first feature. I got to get Spike's blessing. And Anthony plays Morris Blackman in Spike's television series. It was immediate. He's everything that I was looking for. Everybody else had to audition, and I was just like, he's,
I was like, yeah.
So when can you sign up? So Anthony was love at first sight when it came to casting this particular role.
Who's the better baseball player?
Oh, I think Anthony's got me, man. He's got me.
All right. I mean, I heard you could hit, though, man. I mean, I don't know,
my
bro.
Days
we gotta check
my days
these
are numbered, yeah.
My average is 333 senior year, though, bro. You know what I'm saying?
I batted over 300 my senior year. But I became a pitcher in college, so we'd have to have a duel at some point.
We're talking with filmmaker Ronaldo Marcus Green and actor Anthony Ramos about their film, Monsters and Men. People who have written about the projects describe them as police states. And there's a scene early in the film where a character, a young man who's a baseball player, played by Kelvin Harrison Jr., is walking home.
Let's relax. We're just going to ask you a couple of questions, okay? Where are you coming from right now?
Practice.
What, basketball?
Baseball.
Baseball.
What do you got in the bag?
Books.
Now speak up, son.
Books.
All right, why don't you take your bag off? Let me take a look inside.
What do you keep reaching for anyway? What's in your pockets?
My phone.
Your phone, that's it?
Yeah.
You know what? Come over to the car. Just put your hands right here. Spread your legs.
It's important to note, too, that the opening scene of this film is a black police officer who is not in uniform, who's pulled over for driving while black. And it's later revealed this is the sixth time he's been pulled over for driving while black. This young man is walking while black. These are really important elements to the story. Tell us a little bit about him.
Well, the second with Calvin Harrison, that is the short film that I made. The short film itself happened as a response to the Trayvon Martin decision with George Zimmerman. And I remember thinking, you know, I was an athlete growing up in high school, and I could be walking home in my neighborhood, and easily that could have been me. And this is all the time, and I'm sure, you know, I can't speak for everybody, but I'm sure every brown person in New York has been stopped or questioned in some capacity, whether it's at the airport, whether it's a slightly different look at a Starbucks, that you've experienced some form of you don't belong here. And I've experienced my whole life, but you become immune to it. It becomes part of just a conditioning. It's a conditioning that we kind of grow up. It's, oh, this is just normal. Like when you go on the airport, we have to wait. The notion that your skin means something dangerous, it means that you're, you know, at fault from the time that you're born. There's something wrong with that. I have however many degrees on the wall, and it doesn't matter. At night with a hood, I'm a threat. And it doesn't matter whether it's cold out and I'm covering my ears because it's cold. I'm a threat. And that constant feeling is just something that as I get older, I become more and more frustrated by it. When I was young, it didn't even dawn on me as much. I'm a father now. You know, I think about my children. My two sons are now 4 and 4 months old. So, but we're about to have those conversations.
About to have the talk.
You know, the subtle racism that we feel every day, the common reminders that we receive on a daily basis. And the short film doesn't have the perspective of the police officer. Mm. How can I take that short and expand on the same world, which seemed to tap into something? People were responding to the short film. They were responding to that world. But how do we get to these situations? How do we get to the Eric Garners, the Sandra Blands, the Tamir Rice? How do we get to that situation? And it got me back to the videotape. And that's where Anthony's character was kind of born.
The reason that we know what has happened to these people is because somebody has shot a cell phone video. And Anthony, your character is, I won't say in the right place at the right time, because he's in the wrong place at the wrong time, really.
100%, yeah.
And something that I think a lot of people don't understand, and it's fictionalized in this film, but this is true in the real world as well, is that people who shoot those videos are often in peril themselves. That there is a risk that they face in putting this video out there. There's going to be retaliation against them. And they may not be people who really are equipped to handle what's going to come with that. And that seems to be a huge part of your story, that you're having this video as a character is as much curse as it is blessing for justice.
Yeah, I think it's how far do you go to do the right thing? Thank God I've never been in that situation in real life, but, you know, I have been handcuffed and I have had these kind of conversations with my cousin who is a detective. I grew up in Bushwick in the projects in Brooklyn, and it was, you know, unfortunately, I you know, I'd have to come home and hear, you know, my close friend who I was, you know, one of my close friends killed someone and is in jail for 25 to life. Like, these are and then you become numb to it. And it's like, how do we not get numb to it? And I feel like Manny was trying to, I feel like he's like, I'm a part of the problem if I don't put it out. And if I do, I feel like I'm invoking change, but it affects me and my family in a way that is beyond comprehension. And the level of fear is I can only imagine that I took on as a character. I was like, this kid must be afraid for his life, not only for his life, but for his daughter's life, his girlfriend's life, and the baby that's not even born yet. But it's like, it's that thing that we have to ask ourselves, what is the right thing to do and how far will you go to do it?
Coming up on The Frame, Anthony Ramos and Ronaldo Marcus Green make the case for why, as artists, they feel it's vital to also be activists. Now we continue my conversation with writer-director Ronaldo Marcus Green and actor Anthony Ramos. Their upcoming film is called Monsters and Men. Ramos, who was in the original cast of Hamilton, he's in Spike Lee's Netflix series She's Gotta Have It, and the Bradley Cooper, Lady Gaga remake of A Star is Born. In this film, he plays a character who videotapes an NYPD officer shooting an unarmed black man. To try to keep him quiet, the police detain and try to intimidate him. One key moment in this part of the story is set in a police interview room. Ramos's character and John David Washington's character approach different sides of a one-way mirror. Here's Ramos talking about the sequence.
I think this kid felt like his back was against the wall. He had no chance. Man, I'm seeing it. Just my neighbors, even kids, like, you know, who I knew since they were born, are still living in my old neighborhood. And I come back and we have conversations and they feel like that their environment is all they have. They feel like there's no way out. They feel like the world is against them. And I felt like Manny felt like the world was against him. And John David's character, I feel like Dennis could see that. And Dennis could empathize with that. And Dennis may have had moments where he felt like the world was against him, especially being a black cop. But I feel like there's so much loud silence in this movie. And that could not be to me, that's the loudest scene in the movie. And it's the quietest. Those guys are screaming. Because I feel like Dennis just wants to do more and doesn't know how. And Manny wish he could do more and doesn't know how.
One of the things that this film raises is this question with one character. Can you be an athlete and an activist at the same time? It's certainly key to the debate right now about NFL players and their right to take a knee during the national anthem as a way of speaking out. And I'd ask both of you this question, which is a version of that question. Can you be an artist and an activist at the same time? Are they mutually exclusive, or can you figure out a way to do both at the same time?
I mean, I think the short answer is absolutely you can. And I think it's almost impossible to be an athlete today and not. That's the pressure that they have. So it's absolutely, it is possible to do both. People are doing it. Just think about this year alone, how many movies are tackling this very similar issues, which is amazing. I mean, we're rooting for those movies. Blindspotting, Sorry to Bother You, Black Klansman. We have so many movies that are tackling it. And to me, those are my teammates. Like, I look at those movies as like, I got two wide receivers, I got a running back, and we're, you know, we're just
great
like,
analogy.
We're moving, I want to throw a touchdown down the field. And you know, however we move the needle. And we all have a responsibility to ourselves to tell the truth. And whether that means activism or some form of social consciousness, that's great. You know, I didn't set out to make a political movie. It just so happens to tackle issues that mean something to me and my community. And of course, they become politicized because that's the way people look at these things. But when this is your environment in the world that you know, it's just you're making a movie about your friends and you're making a movie about your family.
What about you, Anthony? And what have you learned from your creative partnership, not only with Ronaldo, but with Lin-Manuel Miranda?
The flame sparked when I was singing about revolution 8 times a week for 2.5 years. So when you're singing these words, I'm past patiently waiting, I'm passionately smashing every expectation, every action is an act of creation. You're singing, you're listening to this every single day. It's like it becomes a part of you. And then, you know, Puerto Rico happened and I decided to jump in and I started working with this organization called the Maria Fund. And I didn't know what I was getting myself into, but this guy, Jesus Gonzalez, calls me one day after we had already met. He's like, you know, I'd love to get you involved with the Maria Fund. There's a lot going on in Puerto Rico right now. And you know, we need to step up as Boricuas, he was saying to me. And I said, you know, you know what? I'm going to jump in. I don't know what I'm getting myself into, but let's go. And he calls me on a Monday like, "Aunt, I'm going to Puerto Rico on Wednesday." I don't know what I had going on that week. I don't know what to expect. I haven't been to the island since the hurricane. I only know the Puerto Rico that I know. So I was afraid of what I was going to see when the plane was landing. I was afraid of what I was going to experience when I got there. And I'd be lying if I said to you that I wasn't scared and I just jumped right in. But I had a moment. I waited. I said, "Give me a couple hours." And I said, I canceled everything I had that week and I said, "Yo, I'm coming." And I went to Puerto Rico for 4 days, stood with 3 strangers in an Airbnb, and we just went to like 4 or 5 communities to these community centers that they're building in Comerío and in Humacao. These are all places, you know, Caguas in Puerto Rico. and there are people in the communities who are stepping up, and we cleaned out what used to be a guy's house. And this woman in Spanish kept saying, ¿Quién dice no se pueden? Who's saying we can't do this? And yo, like, I'm telling you, my eyes started to well up and I was like, that's right. We don't need to wait on anyone. We don't have to wait on the government. I came back home and I called Spike. I said, yo, Spike, you will not believe what I saw. And the level of resilience and love on the island is like beyond anything I've ever seen. Spike called me like a week later. Aunt Puerto Rico, I want to help. And I said, all right, this is the organization. Let's go. Spike put on sale these shirts that I wear in the show, and she's got to have it. Raised, I mean, almost $50,000, I think, or something like that. And we've got an episode in the season now shot in Puerto Rico, which the level of emotion that came over me was, and just shedding light on what's going on. And we can use our art to do amazing things. You know, I think it's shame on us if we decide not to do that. You know, it's a gift. It's a gift.
Anthony Rinaldo, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
That was writer and director Rinaldo Marcus Green and actor Anthony Ramos. Their film, Monsters and Men, opens on September 28th. And that's our show for today. I'm John Horn. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow.